From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. While the country awaits the report from the FBI on the Kavanaugh nomination process, we spoke with Joe Loria, the editor-in-chief of ConsortiumNews.com, about two pieces at the news magazine's website, one authored by him and another by Ray McGovern, the former CIA official. McGovern's piece is called Will God Save Kavanaugh? And Joe Loria's piece is called The Kavanaugh Case, Sex, Lies, Privilege, and Plenty of Beer. Well, Joe, more insanity like we've seen over the last couple of years around the Brett Kavanaugh nomination and the hearings and the allegations against him and those that have decided that they know that he did it and those that have decided that they know that he didn't do it and they know she's lying and they know she's telling the truth and yada, 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 yada.
Well, first I want to say that you're absolutely right, that this is another insane event in American politics that is kind of hard to believe. And in fact, it's so out there what happened the other day on Thursday that Saturday Night Live, I think, had a hard time satirizing it. They just turned it up a few more notches, and it was funny. But, I mean, you could have just run the actual tape as a piece of satire because it's unbelievable we've got to. But before we get on to the hearing, yeah, Ray's piece ran before the hearing on Thursday,
right,
which, of course, is when we heard from his accuser and from Kavanaugh himself. And Ray's just going on about how surprised he is that nothing seems to have changed in a Jesuit school from the days when he went to Fordham right. Prep. He doesn't mention Fordham Prep, but I know that it is.
Right.
Because he's told me. So he went to a Jesuit prep school, as did Judge Brett Kavanaugh, went to a Georgetown prep in Maryland. And about 30 or 40 years apart, and this is the point he's making,
right,
that he went to that school back, I guess, in the, 50 years ago would be what?
I don't know. Well, Ray was born in 1939, so he would have graduated high school roughly in 1957. So you're talking like 53, 54.
Okay, the 50s.
Right.
So what Ray is, thank you for that. What Ray is saying is that the mores, or the beliefs about the superiority of men at a Jesuit school that he learned and was taught in the 50s has not changed at all, judging on the behavior and mindset of Judge Kavanaugh. That's what he's saying, and he's surprised and depressed by that. A lot of commentators didn't agree with him.
Right.
And there's a strong, of course, support for and against Kavanaugh that we're going to talk about. So Ray was going out there and saying that he basically was slamming Kavanaugh for having internalized these male dominant ideas that Ray is surprised still exists to such an extent at a Jesuit school in the 1980s, 30 years later.
Right. So, I mean, he starts out his piece, are boys really better than girls? I know you are one, but please try to be fair. This is a letter from an 8-year-old Helen to God, saying, God, I know you're a boy, but are boys really better than girls? It's cute. And then he does go into this. He went to, and you're right, he went to Fordham Prep and then Fordham University, and I forget where after that. But, I'm a Catholic school kid also. I did first through ninth grade in Catholic schools, and, you know, the priests are the ones that could touch the host back then. They're still priests, or only male in the Roman Catholic Church. They're the, you know, direct the intervener between you and God. They can, turn the host into the body and blood of Jesus Christ and act as God's agent to forgive your sins and all these other things, males only. So there's definitely male supremacy, heavy strain through the Roman Catholic Church. And so Catholic prep schools most likely reproduce that and have been since this became the ideology of the church back, in the early days, almost 2,000 years ago.
Well, actually, it goes to about the 10th century when the church banned forever the idea, or until now, the idea of women being priests, because the issue of inheritance. The priests were married, some of them, and then they were living on church property. When they died, they were giving some of that away to their sons. The church wanted to hold on to all the property, so they said you can't get married. They didn't want priests to have children because they didn't want to lose any of their property. It's a completely absurd argument today. Obviously, the women belong as priests, I believe, in the Catholic Church. I also went to Catholic grammar school and a high school in the Bronx, not Fordham Prep. And so I know that environment that Ray's writing about and that Mr. Kavanaugh here comes from to some extent. Mine wasn't as exclusive maybe as Fordham Prep or the Georgetown Prep that he went to. But nonetheless, I understand this background of the church thinking. And as in my second piece, I write about a priest, actually, and what many of them are like, unfortunately.
Right. So so he sets that up as the context for, you know, what's happening in the Senate hearings. And I think more so in the culture, too. But there's a presumption here. At least I'm reading it, looking at Ray's piece, that there's a presumption that Kavanaugh did, in fact, do it, or in any event, that he has these attitudes. And there are probably examples of that in the record. They're not really being cited anywhere, though. And so I'm wondering what the basis of Ray's knowledge is, other than his experience with the contextual.
Yeah,
and then from there, maybe we could embellish that a little bit, you know.
Well, what he's doing here more, I think, than saying that Kavanaugh is guilty is that he's highlighting the attitudes that Kavanaugh is not guilty being put forward by some members of the committee. For example, he quotes Hatch apparently, who said that he knew that the allegation by Deborah Ramirez, the one his classmate. Kavanaugh's classmate from Yale, that was phony. And then Hatch was asked why, and he said, because I know it is. That's why. So I think that this is clearly not a good enough answer.
Right.
I know that it's a phony charge. Why? Because I just know it is.
Because I know
so
it.
So Ray's talking, I think Ray's pointing out more that this attitude of male supremacy that still exists in the Jesuit schools also exists on the committee, which he funnily says is a chairman of a committee like this is another kind of a god in Washington, and a male one in this case, of course. So I think Ray is pointing out the attitudes that are on the committee as well, rather than saying that for sure he knows that those charges against Kavanaugh are true. I think he's talking more about the attitudes that are prevailing around it, this male dominant, male supremacist ideas.
Yeah, I don't think that's
allowing him to maybe usher his way through. As you know, the committee did not subpoena any of the witnesses, particularly Mark Judge, who Kavanaugh's accuser Christine Blasey Ford says was in the room when Kavanaugh attacked her. That he was never subpoenaed. He was allowed to submit a statement, which of course is not the same as being interviewed by the FBI or by a senator. And now it was only under enormous pressure, and finally Jeff Flake's decision that the FBI has brought into this at all, and they've been talking to Mark Judge for the last 2 days. So there was this resistance on the Republican side to any of these allegations rather than taking them seriously, which they should have. This is what Ray is saying, and I agree with.
Yeah. I mean, not controversial that the Senate is a repository of some of the most reactionary, social, cultural, political, ideological concepts on the planet. And in fact, it's very, you know, existence. This is a manifestation of a lot of that. It's an anti-democratic one as well. The thing that I'm curious and want to maybe probe a little bit here. First, it was an affidavit, a sworn testimony that came from the rebuttal witness, and it is not the same as being cross-examined. But as a lot of folks have been pointing out, this isn't a criminal trial either.
Right.
And so when you have someone that makes an accusation and then says, and by the way, part of the fact pattern is this, that, and the other thing, The standard that I faced in civil litigation is an affidavit from another party that I don't get to examine that gets presented as a rebuttal evidence. Okay? You said this happened. Here's sworn testimony from someone that you named as a witness that said, no, it didn't. End of allegation. Next. And so, that's not an unusual standard. And then the larger context is the framing of this happened not... How long did it take her to bring this, 30 years or whatever? But this was presented to Feinstein in July, and it was not presented to the committee until the very end of the process. Clearly, whatever the intent is, I'm not going to try to impute intent, but I think it's obvious, to push this out further so that it's closer to the election. What you have, in essence, is the society being divided up on this question, with a very large percent of women siding, that basically this woman was victimized. That's how they're polling. That's half the electorate. So at the margins, it's going to definitely have an impact on the election. And it seems like that's what it was tailored to do.
Well, obviously, this is a highly politicized situation. That's what you're describing. And in my piece, I tried to separate this woman and sexual attacks in general from that. Now, yes, we only learned about this very close to the vote coming up on Kavanaugh, and yes, closer to the November elections. But it's not clear to me exactly what happened when the Democrats, Feinstein, got this letter from Ford, in which she asked for anonymity. Feinstein said in the hearing that she tried to honor that anonymity, and they did not reveal this information because of that, but that they asked the FBI late. It is late in the process. They asked the FBI several weeks later to look into this, and the FBI did not want to. Now, in the Anita Hill hearings, the FBI was brought in. It is not uncommon for in the confirmation process for a background check to be done by the FBI. The Republicans refused to do that. And Kavanaugh had several times he was asked during the hearing by Democratic senators whether he would welcome that, and he did not welcome that. So you have to wonder why not. So whether this is a conspiracy by the Democrats to withhold this and spring it at the last minute is not clear to me, because she did not want her name revealed. Right. And according to Feinstein, the people who probably revealed it were her friends, who she did discuss it with. They probably told reporters, who then showed up at her house and at her workplace. And there was one reporter who came up to her inside the classroom where she teaches, and she thought it was a student, turned out to be a reporter. So she got kind of fed up by all this and decided to go on the record late in this in the game. And then the Washington Post wrote its story, and then we know what happened. It led to her appearing at this hearing on Thursday. I'm trying to separate. There's no question the Democratic Party has used the identity politics as their main argument for being a progressive party, while at the same time, hiding behind that to pursue a very aggressive foreign policy. That's no different than the Republicans. That's hegemonic, and that is caused enormous suffering around the world to expand American power. So I have been highly critical in my writings on television, on radio, about the Democratic Party's foreign policy, and that the identity politics is not all there is to being progressive. It's not to say that those aren't important issues about LGBT, about sexism, about the tax on women. So I don't think that is an issue that should be dismissed, but it shouldn't be the only thing the Democrats talk about, or the main thing, and hiding behind that. But in this case, I think that's not what's happening here. I think this, I do believe Ford. I don't know for sure. It's not a criminal case, but I think she was believable. A lot of people, including on the Republican side, apparently thought she was believable until Kavanaugh stormed into the hearing room with his own defense, with his ballistic defense. So I don't think that this is what's going on, because I don't think there's proof that the Democrats are using her or invented her. She's not a plot by the Democrats in terms of let's get her. The timing, according to Feinstein, was delayed because they didn't want to reveal her name, and they were trying, but they did ask too late for the FBI to get involved. So that is suspicious, that clearly this probably was a tactical move on the Democrats to do it late to try to stall his vote. Now, another point I make in my piece, Don, I think you'll agree with, and we disagree on some of this, is that the Democrats did a terrible job on going after him on his serious record of helping the George W. Bush administration to perhaps approve torture memos, surveillance, and other criminal activity of the George Bush, W. Bush administration. He was part of the legal team.
Right.
He was in there. And he was also part, of course, of the Ken Starr thing. He's a right-wing nut. He's a right-wing extreme partisan. And this is the main reason why I'm saying he should not be on the court. Plus, his emotional outbursts did not bode well for somebody on the court. So aside from whether the woman is telling the truth or not against him, he shouldn't be on the court for his demeanor, for his partisanship, and for the fact that his record at the Bush administration. And this has been overlooked too much, I think.
Well, I definitely want to go there. Some of the other things we can come back to. But first of all, let's take a look at who's on the committee. Because, you know, the entire, you know, material that you just described, the torture memos, the whole, you know, post-9/11 environment that was constructed, that he was one of the, if not architects, one of the bricklayers that the architects hired to, you know, to accomplish these things. You know, we've got Feinstein. Okay, I don't think she wants to open that whole question up, because where was she while all of that was going on? She was squarely in that same corner. Durbin, Leahy, these people are on the same page as Kavanaugh as to those matters, have been since 2001. And so they're not going to go there because they don't oppose those policies. And what that means, what that not just implies but or suggests, but practically guarantees, is that the next person that comes along that is satisfactory to them is also going to be on the same page as far as those actual policies go.
Yeah, I agree. That's why they are hiding again behind this identity politics issue, it seems like. But I was just trying to point out in this piece that we cannot sweep this woman, Christine Blasey Ford, into this plot or this democratic machinations, that something really happened to her, and it could very well have been Kavanaugh who did it. So I think this is serious, and we have to take people who claim they were attacked sexually very seriously, plus not dismiss them because they can't remember something from 36 years ago, when there's plenty of evidence, and I give my own evidence, what happened to me, that you forget all those other details, but you remember exactly who did what to you and when, and not when necessarily, but who it was and what was done. So I'm trying to defend her in this mess, this political mess, in which both sides are, of course, again behaving terribly, and the Democrats particularly, and as you just pointed out, wanting to defend this post 9/11 aggressive foreign policy. They don't want to go there, as you just said. But what concerns me is even if they derail, as you just said, if they derail Kavanaugh, the next guy that's going to be nominated is going to be another right winger, probably by Trump, with the same things. So, in other words, if this new guy doesn't have any, and they'll probably really check out, if there is a new guy, they're going to check out his background a lot better than they probably checked out Kavanaugh's.
Right.
If he has no allegations of anything like this against him, will he sail through, even if he has proven himself to be pro-corporate and pro-aggressive? I mean, if he doesn't have the same kind of legal background that Kavanaugh had working inside the administration, but that if his record on the bench, wherever he's been, has been the right-wing one that the Trump administration would want, why then we would see the Democrats would not probably oppose him. So it's sad that they are not opposing him on really serious issues, but that they are on this sexual attack allegation. I'm just saying you have to take that attack allegation seriously, not to mean this woman, who may very well have been attacked by this guy, and his behavior at the hearing also disqualifies him. These are the points I'm making in my piece. I don't think he belongs there for a number of reasons, and I hope that he isn't. But I'm not worried. I'm worried about the next guy who would come along. That's
right.
I mean, Democrats would not oppose it.
As far as his performance or whatever at the hearings, I don't have any opinion on that, honestly. Having been subjected to the media attention that had gone on over the last week, if he in fact had nothing to do with this event that was described, which does not say that nothing happened to her, but perhaps since she's got memory lapses, with all these other aspects of it, perhaps she has that. A memory lapse with that too. It's possible. And if that's the case, then his behavior at this thing. I look at that in an entirely different light and not as disqualifying for being on the Supreme Court. And in any event, that pales to he should be disqualified based on policy. And here's the thing. The policy that we're discussing, I think that that would be disqualifying torture and all of those things. The things that people are discussing that are the actual, the political fare that gets dished up every time people refer to the Supreme Court and how presidential election matters because of court appointments and Supreme Court, blah, 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 in the public discourse. It means, in general, to people, Roe v. Wade, same-sex marriage, voting rights on occasion comes up. It should come up all the time. War powers. Those are the things that people are talking about when they talk about the court. But if you look at the docket, that's a minute part of the business of the court. And there are some things that take up a lot of the court's attention, including, in particular, commercial cases where there are, on occasion, billions of dollars that affect the public in general, and lots of the classes of people who are also affected by Roe v. Wade, voting rights, etc. In a more material way, though, things that have to do with, for example, the bankruptcy law, whether you can discharge student debt in bankruptcy when they change the law, is that constitutional, etc., etc. That's the real fare at the Supreme Court. That's not ever part of the discussion. We have no idea whether this judge or this judge or this judge, how they rule, what their record is on cases that have to do with some very weighty issues that are never part of the conversation, where if someone is willing to allow corporations to own everything, including your soul, let's say, for some case in the Supreme Court, but they're against Roe v. Wade or vice versa, people will decide whether that person should be on the court based on their position on Roe v. Wade as opposed to something that might be much weightier, as most of the business of the court is, in fact.
Well, in Kavanaugh's case, he only apparently made 24 written opinions, and all the time, 12 years, he's been on a federal court. So I did not go through all 24. I didn't go through any of them, to be honest with you, and I don't know whether he touched on those financial and commercial matters you described. But yes, it should be an important part of this. So the idea that we've come down to trying to stop him based on a sexual assault allegation, it shouldn't have come to this. He should have been opposed on these other issues. But if they can get him on this and we don't want him on the court, that's fine with me. And I also found her believable too, and I don't find him believable. So I think this is good enough reason to get rid of this guy. And I hope that that's what happens. But you're absolutely right. This whole process is for such a serious decision as this, lifetime appointment. And I totally oppose the idea of a lifetime appointment for anybody, even the Pope. I think that they should be like a 10-year limit on your time on the Supreme Court. It's just ridiculous to give. And of course, they're always choosing younger guys. He's 53, so you might get a good 25 years out of him or more.
Right.
So this is wrong. But no, the process is not what we'd want it to be. Plus, apparently the Republicans only dumped a whole bunch of documents onto the Democratic side at the very last minute, so they didn't want them. There's all these games going on. They didn't want them to really examine his record as closely as they could have.
Right.
But as you pointed out, Don, we know about this stuff from the Bush administration for a long time, what his role was, what his role in the Ken Starr investigation was, and this has not come up, and it should have, and it's because, as you point out, the Democrats don't agree with most of this aggressive foreign policy.
Right.
And so they could only use a sexual attack allegation against him, which, again, I think should be taken very seriously. But that is not the right way to take this. This should have been he should have been nailed on all of these things. But he wasn't, because Democrats fail us once again, as the Republicans always do.
Yeah. We're getting close to time. I think we're at about 4 minutes or something. One of the things that I think is important to well, there are two things that are important to remember. Number one, in general, this is a huge cultural event. We've had them one after another, basically, lately, because of the whatever. So somebody's driving, you know, a public agenda very hard. That's almost wall to wall throughout the media, and it's in our face constantly now for quite some time. What you have going on here, aside from everything else, is a debasement in the public conversation that's sort of tantamount to peeing in the jury pool on the concept of the presumption of innocence, whether or not that should apply to someone who is, you know, in essence, at an elaborate job interview. The idea that someone can be, you know, you can fact find by deciding if someone is believable or not by looking at them on television. You have people that are entrenched on both sides of this in a belief that they're right and wrong without there being the necessity for any kind of fact finding. And that, to me, as a, you know, as that gels in the public mind as a consequence of this, that's a pretty troubling thing all by itself. And, you know, it's sort of like what was done to the public consciousness over a period from the mid-60s onward as they tried to culturally undo what the Warren Court had done in terms of having people understand that just because the cops said they did it doesn't mean they did it. And to sort of try to force that kind of a change in the culture so that it fed into the court system and started producing outcomes along the lines that they intended. That was countered with a very aggressive public relations campaign throughout our media, where it's always technicalities that, you know, mass murderers and rapists are getting off on and such. And this seems to me to risk taking another step down that road culturally, and a big one. What do you think of that?
Well, first, it is a job interview under oath, so not your average job interview, clearly. And when you go for a job, you are trying to show your prospective employer that you are qualified for the job and you have the right character for the job. So anybody who comes forward and says, or there's any evidence that comes forward that you may not have that character, you know, has to be looked at. And I think that's what's going on here. And I don't see any problem with that whatsoever. I think the culture you're talking about goes back again. One aspect of it is to what Ray was talking about, a culture of male dominance and supremacy, and that women were not, and that sexual assault victims were not taken seriously at all. And now they are starting to be. And I think that's an important advancement in our society. And I think that the fact that this thing took place on national TV, where the people on the trading floor on Wall Street stopped everything to watch it, this type of thing, the country was transfixed about this, and it's about power. It's about the relationship of this nobody, this woman nobody ever heard of, coming out of California and then suddenly appearing on national TV inside of a Senate hearing room under oath, making these allegations against an enormously powerful man, is a very important moment in our recent history, because we are trying to redress that imbalance, the power of a man like Kavanaugh, and then the lack of power of a woman like Christine Blasey Ford being given this, and you probably don't agree with this, but being given this platform to tearfully explain what happened, what this guy did to her. And again, sex victims have different types of memory lapses. They don't remember a lot of details. This is, should not be disqualifying. But that she can come there and bring this guy to come out swinging like he did, to show that perhaps, you know, he doesn't want to take this crap because he doesn't think this woman has any right basically to challenge him for this job. This has been, he was groomed for this. He's been put on a path, his privileged path, from a young age. He can get away with whatever he wants to, and he's going to be able, he just needs this job. How dare she say anything about it? So that's the way I see the cultural shift here, that we're seeing women being taken more seriously and sex victims being taken more seriously, and that it's a powerless person against a very powerful person who's being given a platform to challenge this guy. The Democrats should have challenged him, as we said, on all the other issues, but I think it was right to bring her there and to challenge him in front of everyone. And let's see if the FBI comes up with something to corroborate what she said. It is not a criminal case. He is looking for this job, but if some of that could be corroborated and he did do this, or it seems more likely that he did this, then I don't think he deserves this job.
Joe, thanks a lot. We'll speak with you again next week and see how this all turns out. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.